And I'm a bit tired and jet lagged, so if you don't understand something, it's because I don't make sense. So just ask me, and or maybe ask me tomorrow. I should probably be a little bit better. But yes, let's see. So I decided to talk about two things, because the latest work is the Witnessing Quantum Memory. But I think Rob invited me here because I talked to him about the quantum switch a little bit. So I thought it's fair enough to at least say a few things about the experiment that we did. So just a little bit of context. I'm at the part of the QT lab, which is the lab of Andrew White. But of course, my main work, all my works are together with Fabio Costa. And this particular work, the second part, the witnessing part, also Gerard collaborated. So we're here in Brisbane and at the University of Queensland. Right, so the first part is about the quantum switch. So basically, it's the experiment that we did at the labs of Andrew White. And I'm going to talk about what we have achieved. Right, so this is the theoretical experimental setup. So let's see. So the degree of freedom that is the target for the quantum switch was optical orbital angular momentum. That's the shape of the laser, basically, or the shape of a photon. It's the shape of the wavefront of the photon. So it goes out of the source. It's a coherent light. Then this cover slip is just to create the mode that we needed. The pinhole and the lenses are just to isolate the mode that we needed. And then, why did I put HV? Right. So, and the target, the control, right. So the target system is optical angular momentum. And then the control system is polarization. So we started with H plus V state. So I don't have a laser. Is this?
Yeah, that should work. Right.
So this is a PBS, polarizing beam splitter. So it's this here. It transmits horizontal and it reflects vertical. So, and now this is the Alice part. So because we act on OEM modes, we needed all these, I think it's 10 elements that act on OEM and produce an arbitrary unitary on OEM. Actually, since in the lab we had to implement not any arbitrary unitary, but particular ones, we just removed a few elements. Anyway, this is Alice's part. I guess I won't talk about experimental things unless there's some questions. And this is Bob's part. This is just what they need to implement the unitaries. And so as you know, it goes first to A, and then it goes to B. This is the horizontal part. And the vertical first goes to B, reflected, then goes to A, and then reflected, and then it's here. So this is the measurement part. Okay, so one of the points of the paper, I suppose, is so the quantum switch was done before already at in Vienna, group of Vienna. So we wanted to say why we did it. So what were the improvements that this experiment was compared to the previous experiment? Okay, so the previous experiment, maybe I should have, I think I have something. Right. So the previous experiment, the target system, so the system where the unitaries are implemented, was wave plates. And the control system was path, which this means that the channel from A to B was here. So the beam passed through this element here. And if it was B to A, the beam passed here. So one can say that the unitaries that this wave plate was implementing was different unitaries. In which case, when analysis first, you have one unitary to be implemented, and one analysis second, you have a different unitary. So this means that Alice is not the same. So you have two Alices, and by extension, you have two Bob. So that was one thing that was implemented in the previous switch, in the previous experiments. So the improvement that we have is that our optical elements, so basically this was a difference in space, so A before B, B before A, whereas in our case, it's a difference in time. Let me show you the other thing again. Yes, so the path is exactly the same, that the horizontal part is taking or the vertical part. So whether Alice is first or second, the optical path of the beam is the same. So in that case, you won't have the same the problem as the previous one. So of course, you still have Alice operating in a superposition of time one and time two, whether she's first or second. And one thing that we can claim experimentally is that our optical elements do change in time, in the sense that it could be that Alice operates a different, performs a different unitary before or after, whether she's at time T1 or T2. However, optical elements are less likely to change in time, whereas the position of the input photon here could lead to different unitaries. So this was one thing. And the other thing is that, which has to do with this, is that our photons are very long. So the photons, the basically, I think it's called the coherent length, was much larger than the size of the experiment, counting the whole trips. So this means that the application of Alice was within the size of a photon, let's say. Okay. So what have we achieved? Okay, first of all, I like this question with experiments, because I always get the same answer. So I always ask the experimentalists, even when I was experimentalist, I kept asking this question, so why are we doing this? And the answer, it's the only answer I got, is because we can. So I like, I don't know, I mean, it's a satisfactory answer for me, but yeah. Okay, this, you know that many people have different opinions about this, whether it was indefinite causal order, and of course, what it means, indefinite causal order. Personally, I believe that just this word, indefinite causal order, means a violation of a causal inequality, because it's causal order. There has to be A causing B, and this has to be indefinite. So in my opinion, but it's just semantics, it's just that I wouldn't say in these words. And another thing is that there are verifications is to verify whether we have actually implemented the quantum switch. This is just to point out the paper of Ognian, where this paper requires to do some particular operations to prove, according to these arguments, that we have performed the quantum switch, but we did not do this in the lab. And I think Fabio's talk has to do something about that, a little bit. Okay. So anything else to say? Well, first I did this slide because I thought Tim was going to talk about this. So I was going to prompt you to that. But in any case, this is a paper that we did with Marco Hawk, Fabio, and Tim. And it's about violating a causal inequality without a quantum switch, is with a normal experiment, so with definite causal order. However, we use the trick of having Gaussian modes as our photons with highly delocalized size of the mode, and this yields the violation of the inequality. Okay, that was brief, And I'll go to the next part, which is the witnessing come to memory. So first of all, just the motivation of the next part. So why would we need to detect in the lab a quantum memory? That's just a picture from the lab of one of the labs of Andrew White. It's just it's a generation of pairs of photons, and these are just tiny mirrors that deflect the photons, and the light is just fluorescence. But it just means that that our systems are just open to the environment. It's just there. There is no many times there is no, even if there is vacuum and everything, there's always the environment that plays a role in the system. And these are, of course, very real pictures. They can be possums in the lab. That happened 5 years ago, I think. And they left various things. They did. So the story is that the aircon things, the duct is called, aircon duct, you can't enter, but things can crawl out of it. So it's like a flap for the pet, but the opposite. So they went there for some reason, I don't know, and then they just, yep. So that would be, I guess, a classical memory, but still. Okay, so the pictures are just for you to enjoy something nice. Okay, so the outline, I'm going to talk about what is a Markovian process and what is a non-Markovian. And one of the results is that we define classical memory and quantum. And then the main result is that we have a way to detect quantum memory in the non-Markovian process. And then I'll show you how to apply this technique on a particular example. Right. So a process, so we follow the definitions of Markovianity introduced by Lindblad and by Accardi and others. And it was adapted as well by Cavan-Modis group in Melbourne, by Pollock et al. And this is our archive paper. So according to that definition of Markovianity, a Markovian process, this is just two examples, the two most general examples, is one that has no noise in the system, in the process. So you have a state, it goes to A, then it goes to B through a channel, and that's it. This channel is perfect, it takes this part and this part. A Markovian process could be also something that has noise. However, this noise, this is the environment, and this is a channel that acts on both system and the environment. That's okay, so this is a noisy channel, let's say, but that's still okay. The point is that every noise, that is every time where the environment interacts with the system, it stays there. There is no interaction between this interaction and that interaction. You'll see later what I'm talking about. So this is a Markovian process. Right. Each interaction with the environment is independent of past ones and initial state. That's the more formal way to say it. And I'm going to go to the process matrix formalism because I want to talk about process matrices, processes and Markovian processes in terms of that formalism. So assume everyone knows it. Okay, I'm going to go a little bit. So this process matrix formalism assumes, I just changed the name for no reason, assumes some parties and an input and an output. It's closed labs. Each lab is described by a quantum instrument, and each map that maps the input to the output is a CP map, and it's described by this map. And then you have another party called Ben. And then the result of that paper was that the probability for two maps to be realized by these two parties is the trace of this process matrix together with the tensor product of the two operations. And this is the Choi matrix of the map. So this is a way to connect. It's like the Born rule. It's a way to connect probabilities with operations of the parties and the environment. I can go a little bit fast as well here. So a few examples of a process matrix. When you have that Allison is before Ben, then there is a channel that sends the output to Allison to the input of Ben. And then you have that the process matrix can be written. This is a Markovian process matrix, but I should say that later. So the process matrix is written as input that lives on that space, tensor with the choi of the map of the channel, the choi of the channel that lives over there, and identity on the output of the last party. So similarly, sorry. So similarly, you have a process matrix, sorry, tiredness kicking in, from Ben to Allison, and then you have that this is the form of this process matrix. Input state over here, channel from B to A, and then identity on the output. Right, so in that formalism, you can write this process matrix, this circuit. And as I said before, this is a Markovian process because there might be interaction with the environment, but it stays there. It's a local interaction. And no information about this interaction is traveling towards other future interactions. So in the language of process matrices, a process matrix is exactly what I described before. It's a tensor product of input states for the first parties, of channels, and of identity on the last party. Right, let's talk about now about non-Markovianity. When you have a non-Markovian process, there is a memory that carries correlations. And these correlations are about, it's about the interactions that happen between the system and the environment in every chance that it had to interact. So this is the kind of worst case scenario because system and environment are jointly prepared. So already they have correlations. And then you have that the environment is taking information from the system again. And this is carried over the different steps. So in this work, we ask the question, is this memory that is in the environment, is it classical or quantum? If that memory is classical, then we can represent our circuit like this. So you can have that this system and environment, they have classical correlations. So this double line represents classical, classical information. So you have environment, you have system, they're classically correlated. Then here they interact together. And then you have that classical information about that interaction travels over here in the next environment, let's say, and then it happens again. So one way to think about this is that the environment is measuring the system. It obtains some classical information about this. And this classical information is traveling and it possibly affects future interaction. So we proved that a process like this can be written in this form. This is a sum of states here and channels. However, right. So, however, the reverse is not true. So, everything that can be written like this, it doesn't necessarily represent a comp. So, it doesn't represent a process matrix. But anyway, this is something we can discuss later. Right. This is just to remember that these are the choi of the channels. And what I said earlier, environment-based classical information and can affect future interaction. Right, this is what I mentioned before. So they have, so in order for this such a form to describe a comb, so to describe a process, it has all these T's to sum up to a CPTP map. Right, so we have defined what is Markovian, what is a process with classical memory. So anything else, so a process matrix that cannot be written as in a Markovian form or in the form of a classical memory, then it has quantum memory. I don't know. Yeah. So in this case, you can imagine that it's a joint state. It could be an entangled state. And then you have a coherent interaction between system and environment. And information about this interaction is traveling through a quantum channel. And you have another coherent interaction between system and channel. So let's see how we detect that the process matrix has quantum memory. Right. So this is just a recap. This is a Markovian process. This is one with classical memory. Ignore the Q. This is a mistake. This is one with a classical memory. And these matrices, they form a convex set because they... Since this is positive and this is positive, they are separable states. So this is the set of separable states. Actually, the set of separable states is a bit smaller than the set of this, but for our purposes, we can call it the same. The result remains the same. Therefore, these process matrices can be seen as separable states. And they form a convex set, as you know. And if you know the theory of detecting entanglement and entanglement witnessing, you will know that a state that is outside this, which corresponds to a process matrix that has quantum memory, because it's not inside this, then it can be detected by a witness. So basically, the set of separable states is a convex set, and a state that is outside that set can be detected through a witness. Right, so what have we done? This is our main result, is we have mapped detecting quantum memory. No, sorry, we have mapped detecting entanglement, which is a well-known problem with well-known solutions. So we have mapped this problem of detecting entanglement to detecting quantum memory. Probably the opposite. So how is this done? We have, so this is one way to detect entanglement through witnesses. And the way one goes is that you have to characterize your set of separable states. And this is done through separability criteria, which I will explain on the next slide. And you use this criteria to describe this set, and there are some packages, some computational packages that find out what is this witness for a particular entangled state. So what is this witness in reality? It's just an operator such that the trace of this operator with the state is negative for an entangled state, for a state that is outside that set. So just a brief description of some separability criteria. So basically, you have a state, and you don't know if it's entangled or if it's separable. So the first thing you can check is the PPT criterion. This is the first thing you go to. This is by Perez, 1996. And it just says, so separability criteria are simple properties that are satisfied by separable states. So if a state is separable, then the partial transpose with respect, this is for a bipartite state, then the partial transpose with respect to one of the systems is positive. This means that if your unknown state has a positive, has a negative partial transpose trace, then it's entangled. So how do you find a witness using this criterion? As I said, the actual witness is the operator, is basically what you need to measure in the lab to detect entanglement. So let's say that you indeed found that it's negative, then it means that there is a ket such that some epsilon here is negative. This means that if you take this projector that corresponds to this particular E epsilon, probably, then you will have this negative eigenvalue. And then you just switch the transpose, and this is your witness. It's an operator that applied on the state gives you a negative value. So another way you can do that is you can write an STP for that. This is a convex optimization technique. It's a technique that solves convex problems. So an STP is just some package you're using. So I use MATLAB, and you just write your variable. This is the witness that you're trying to find. And you say minimize this value, the trace of an operator with rho. This is just some extra constraint that you have to put to your operator. So basically, and it has to be, this variable has to be positive sum definite. So the result is if the minimal value it finds for some z, if it's negative, then it found a witness, and then your state was entangled. And then you can take this operator, and then you can apply it to your state in the lab, and you can prove entanglement of the state. So if that doesn't work, so basically, if there is no negative eigenvalue, if the rho partial transpose is not negative, then it doesn't mean that your state was entangled, was not entangled. It just the result is inconclusive. So what you can do, this was developed by Doherty. What you can do is take the state and extend, take symmetric extensions of the state. So extend the state with a copy of A or B. And so then you have another criterion, which is stronger than the previous one, or at least as strong as the previous one, such that it's the following. It says if rho is separable, then there is this extension such that this holds. Everything is positive. The new state and any partial transpose is positive. How do you find a witness? And you write an STP with this stronger criterion. And you say, find an extension of rho such that all of these are positive. And if the algorithm cannot find this, it says the problem is infeasible, and so the state is entangled. And this is just some technicality. This is the dual of the problem. It's just another way to formulate the problem, and it finds the actual witness that detects entanglement. So there is a third step you can do if the second step didn't work, if you didn't succeed to detect entanglement. You can just keep extending the state. Do I have it here? Yes. And then you have new set of things to check. So you extend the state, and then you say to the STP again, find an extension such that this holds. And if now this is infeasible, then you have detected entanglement. If it didn't find, if it found, then you have to keep going. So the very nice result of this paper is that this set of criteria is a complete family of criteria, which means, first of all, the more you keep going, each step is at least as strong as the previous. So it could be stronger. But also, if the state is entangled, at some point it will be detected by this criterion. This is very nice. However, the drawback is that you end up with a bigger and bigger state, and then your computer might have trouble finding out.
How does this extension terminate? Like, how much do you just do it four times, or does it keep going and going?
In my code, I didn't write something that will keep doing. I went up to the first step of the hierarchy, which I just extended the state once, and it detected entanglement.
Okay, what I mean is just in principle, how long
you can go until forever.
Okay.
There is no limit.
The result is that if your state is entangled, there is a finite step at which it will work.
It will be detected eventually.
So it will work eventually if it's entangled, but you don't know how often you have to keep doing it.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
But it is a big problem once you go, I mean, already in this step, this was already taking 5 seconds. So already with this step, I assume it would have taken a minute. So it's not like we can go up to 100 times this. So it's quite expensive computationally. Right, this is what I want to mention, that is a complete family. And this is just to clarify what's the actual procedure. Is basically you have, it went very fast. So basically, just to remind that row is a process matrix, and that in the lab, you have some process matrix, which you don't know. Otherwise, you wouldn't have done this. You want to detect if there is quantum memory in your lab. So what you want to do is you want to guess what kind of process matrix you have, and then, or state, and then theoretically in your computer, you find the witness for it. And then you go to the lab and you measure the witness, which corresponds to operations that you do in your process matrix. And then if you obtain the negative expectation value for this operator, then you have detected quantum memory in the lab. Right, and the last part is to show you how it worked on this particular example. So here we wanted to create a non-Markovian process with quantum memory. So we put the environment, this is the environment, this is the system, we put it in a 5+ state, just because it was easy to write down the process matrix, but it could be any entangled state. It could be as well separable, but then we had to put another step here to correlate this one and this one. So in this way, we have initial correlations, and then they are retained, they affect the second step, and that's enough to create a process with quantum memory. So yes, this is the environment, and this is the joint. So what we chose for this unitary is this evolves according to the Hamiltonian, which is the Ising model for the nearest neighbor interaction. So this is two spins that want to align together, XX, with, so this is the, how's it called, this J, strength, coupling strength. And this is the strength of an external magnetic field, which wants to align the spins along the Z direction, but independently, not together. So we have these parameters, J and H, and we have T as well over here. And so the process matrix is a function of these parameters, J, H, and T. The coupling strength, strength of the magnetic field, and T, the time of interaction. And this is just the way you obtain this process matrix. Okay. So each dot on this plot is a process matrix with J value and H value and T equals 1. So we have this process matrix. And what we did is we applied, right, don't have more. So we applied the PPT criterion, which means we checked, so we took this, and this is a state, and then we took the partial transpose over one of the two parties, let's say, but it's not one of the two subsystems. Here the subsystems is this, A1, and the second subsystem is this, AIOBI. So we just checked if the partial transpose over one of the subsystems is positive. And we also, so remember this first part, you can check it or you can write it as an STP, which means every time the trace of this witness with the process matrix is negative, then you have detected quantum memory. So basically, apart from the yellow parts, everything else is a process matrix with a quantum memory.
It isn't even yellow negative, it's just a lousy memory?
Well, there are some Markovian parts, which we checked. So we wanted to check, so basically, okay, of course we can check what exactly is zero. So basically, let's assume that all the white, the yellow parts are zero. This means that this criterion did not detect quantum memory. So I also checked with the next step of the criterion. I didn't check the entire thing because each one is a process matrix and it takes 7 seconds. But I checked, I think, this area over here, and it gave exactly the same results. So, right. So all we know is that on everything apart the yellow is quantum memory, and on the yellow parts, we don't know. It's just inconclusive. It could be quantum memory, it could be classical memory, or it could be Markovian. And here we plotted, here it's the value of the relative entropy of the process matrix with the equivalent Markovian one. So the Markovian one is just you trace out this thing and you remain with state here, and then you trace out this state and then you remain with this, and you put them together, and this is the equivalent separable state, let's say. So when this function is zero, then you have that the process is Markovian. This is how you check Markovianity. So you can see, I can go up and down. Oops, come on. So the points where the lines are crossing are Markovian points. That's what we showed. So the rest is either quantum memory that we have not detected, either classical memory.
You mean where the yellow lines cross?
Yes, the lines. So where they cross, and also these over here, are the Markovian points and all the way. And we also prove that these are the only Markovian points. Right. Just some work in progress. We wanted, since we collaborate with the labs of Andrew White, we wanted to test to make this in the lab. However, we thought before we go to quantum memory data, we thought to start with classical memory. However, our thing does not detect classical memory, it detects quantum memory. So we thought maybe we can use machine learning to detect classical memory. And I did the part where we train the thing. And now we're at this stage where we need to probably wait for some wavelets to arrive. So to sum up, I talked about what is what we call a process Markovian, and that we defined how we defined a classical memory in a non-Markovian process, how to detect a quantum memory, some results in an example, and just one last thing. So my thesis, I recently received this one. So if you're interested in 5 chapters of different aspects of projects, different projects about causality, you can give this to maybe a PhD student. You can also buy it as an ebook, but you can also download it for free as a PDF. I don't get any royalties, so just do that. There's no benefit to me. So please download the free PDF and print it. And another thing is that I'm at the end of my current contract. So I'm looking for my next chapter. So if you like what I do and are interested in working with me, you can talk to me. And I think that's it.
Yeah, so just to get it straight, so non-Markovian, if it's non-Markovian and classical, it must be separable, that's the definition?
If it's non-Markovian?
Yeah.
And classical, then it's a separable state.
It must be a separable state.
Yeah. It's the opposite, actually. If it's a separable, if the process matrix it can be written as a separable state,
and it's non-Markovian, then it's classical.
Then it has classical memory. Yes.
No.
Okay. Sorry.
So that's not the definition. It's only an implication. If you have classical memory, then the state is the process matrix is separable.
Well, that's what I was asking.
Yeah. So that's not a definition. It's an implication.
Okay.
So classical memory implies separable, but separable doesn't imply classical memory.
Well, that was all right. So it goes one way and not the other.
Yeah. So the definition is that's not the definition. The definition is constructive. As a
classical memory has to be separable, but separable doesn't have to have classical memory.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to ask, like in the quantum case, what if it's discord instead of entangled? Is that what's going to happen to the memory there?
You mean the initial state, initial
yeah.
system environment?
Yeah.
You can still have classical memory. Just it's not the.
But is
the
it,
next...
is quantum memory impossible if it has discord? Is that just ruled out?
So, if it's a separable state, the initial system and the environment, then you can still have quantum memory if you have more steps. So in our example, we only have one time step, one system-environment interaction. But if you have five or even two system-environment interactions, as long as there's a quantum memory between them, then there can be quantum memory.
Okay.
So initial correlations are not necessary. They are necessary in our example because we only have one next step.
I see.
So there has
okay.
to be.
All right, but if you add more, then okay.
Now, actually, I want to ask a different question based on the previous question. But so when you're talking about the relationship of separable states and the process matrices, I guess before you were talking about the initial state kind of going in, not the, maybe I should say it this way. So if you take a process matrix and you take its Choi matrix,
the Choi is a process matrix? Okay.
Yeah. That is separable if and only if it has classical memory.
No.
Is that
only
right?
One way.
No. It's only one way.
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was the states were going
so in. You have to think of it as, the relation between LOCC and separability. LOCC, local operation, classical communication. Okay, maybe that doesn't
matter. Yeah.
So the definition is if you can perform the process with classical communication between time steps,
mm-hmm.
that's the definition of classical memory.
Mm-hmm.
That implies separability, but it's not equivalent to separability.
Okay.
It's a smaller set. So you have the set of separable process matrices, and then the set of process matrices with classical memory contained in that.
So here, you assume that there's a quantum concept or not? Is that because you speak about process matrices trial, but do you assume they obey the conditions of quantum cons?
Yes.
Could there be any relation between this entanglement and let's say causal separability for more general things. Because in some sense, let's say causally separable processes is a case in which maybe you have like an external memory for the order in which some gates take place. You get a thought about maybe some kind of extension in this direction?
No.